Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is one of an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we'll sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these artists. The conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today we're having lunch with Millicent Young. Welcome to Zero Hour. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Good to be here.
Last couple of people I talked to, one guy we started talking about motorcycles, and the other guy was telling me about his son, getting to know the guy who had been the producer for the Rolling Stones in New York City. His son had moved to New York and met this guy and gotten hooked up with him. So I figured with you, we'd probably start talking about gardens.
Before
the show, you were telling me about the fact that you're a gardener and that you do another show.
Yep.
Tell me about that. What's that about?
Yeah, well, gardening was a way that I was made bread and butter, regular bread and butter, seasonal bread and butter, that helped me in my studio and with all the other times that I didn't have income. And so I've been a estate gardener for over 20 years.
Wow.
And an art critic friend of mine and who used to work at, she's freelance now and used to be at Art News, she got to know me through an exhibition that I was in, and I got the Juror's Award, and she kind of took me under her wing and started giving me opening doors for me in New York and stuff like that. And Landy got decided to branch out and start an online magazine for women. And she knew that I was always struggling, and she wanted to help me out as much as she could. And so I started writing a garden column for this online magazine, and then doing podcasts with her. I didn't even know what a podcast was until about 2 months ago.
What was that movie years ago? Pod? Something about old people living forever or something? But anyway, it doesn't have anything to do with that.
It might have been a Woody Allen movie.
I don't know. Obviously, really memorable flick.
So gardening, basically, for me, it's physical, like sculpture. It's contemplative time. Mm-hmm. It's hard work. Mm-hmm. It's tedious. It's working with the four dimensions, mm-hmm. Time being the fourth dimension there.
Right.
And I find that it is just an extension of my work as a sculptor.
Really?
Yeah, it's an incredible interlacing and interweaving. I can there are times when just the kind of the tedium of raking leaves or the tedium of pulling weeds creates kind of an open space for me to just kind of be still. And it helps me. I can sort out a problem that I'm having in the studio. Something will come together. There's a trance-like state.
Yeah.
And the people who I garden for, my one client in particular in Gordonsville, are just really, really appreciative of who I am and what I can bring to their garden. So it's just an incredibly happy marriage for me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it really is fascinating because when you think about it, gardens are sculpture.
Exactly.
I mean, they really are.
Exactly.
I had never thought about that before.
Exactly. And not only are they a sculpture, but they're like a dance and a musical composition because there's an ephemeral quality to them.
Mm-hmm.
Even if a plant is perennial, it goes through a cycle, you know, so that each time that plant does that movement, it's just like a dancer or a musician, then it's gone.
Right.
And there's all kinds of interactions among the other, and then the sunlight changing, and it's really aromas, and
that's great. great.
It's really mind-blowing when you get to think about it.
Yeah, really. That's amazing. I mean, because when I think of gardening, I think of walking in the other direction. You know? Sort of my first response is like, I'm sort of stuck on the weed part, you know? I haven't developed the other aspects.
Yeah, well, they're always weeds. You know,
right.
Like it's not for somebody who's...
Right,
who's
which is a great title for a book. There are always weeds.
Yep, right. Not for the person who needs to be in control.
The grass is not greener on the other side. There are always weeds. That's the reality, folks. And I think we're done with this show. Thank you. Well, tell me, you know, when we sort of launched into this gardening thing, and anybody who's listening to the radio is probably wondering what in the world are these people talking about.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about your background as a sculptor.
Right.
How did that sort of come about?
Right. How did that come about?
Or why'd you become an artist? I mean, you know, you could have just as easily been, you know, a gardener, obviously. And that would have been it. And I think
right.
a lot of people probably make that decision. You know, they have a career... You know, I mean, they're like me. They have a career, and then they watch television. No,
do radio
but,
shows.
But, yeah, I mean, a lot of us do that, you know. We just, you know. So why, you know, tell me about becoming an artist. How did that come about?
I don't think that it ever came about or not came about. Mm. It was something, there was never a point where I asked myself what I wanted to be when I grew up or set a focus on something. In some sense, especially when I was younger and when I'm thinking what should I major in college and things like that. I was always making things and forming things with my hands, making marks.
Even as a child. Yeah.
Oh, as a it was
really?
It most especially like I could mm-hmm. I was never not into something, making mm-hmm. something out of something. If I had scissors in my hand, I was snipping something.
Right.
If I was you know outside, I was making shapes in the mud and the sand and things like that. And I grew up in New York City, and I just went to the most amazing school mm-hmm. as far as nurturing creativity went, and had.
What school was that?
Dalton School.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there were well-known professional practicing artists teaching there. Their kids were going there. It was just this incredibly potent environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then growing up in the city, I was one of these bizarre children that wandered around the Metropolitan Museum of Art when other kids were out.
Mm-hmm.
Stealing car stereos or something, you know, whatever
well,
they were
yeah.
doing. And so there was never, I remember more distinctly, there was a time where I said, now, it's time I grew up and got a job, and what do I think that I could do mm-hmm. and to make a living? And it was teaching art,
mm-hmm.
and it was, And then I had a moment thinking that I would go into child psychology.
Okay. Really?
And I have found that there are a number of people for whom it's not so much psychology as a draw to the soul mm-hmm. that gets just misdirected into the field of psychology in
right.
quotations. And the whole field of psychology and academia and psychology is just bankrupt as far as I'm concerned.
I'm not quite sure what you're saying.
Well, let me feel my way through this. There's an aspect of mystery.
Uh-huh.
There's another aspect of there's what it is that we know at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's... what is unknown yet to be known.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the unknowable. It's just impossible. Those questions will
and you
be
see
answered.
All those things as part of the artistic process?
Absolutely.
Really?
I see that totally as part of my process and
uh-huh.
as part of creative process, yes.
So
absolutely.
Part of the reason you do what you do is to... I don't want to put words in your mouth. Is to what?
I really am engaging in a conversation with the unknown,
mm-hmm.
with and practicing in a way, it's a practice with this process of forming and transforming, mm-hmm. which I think is a fundamental human impulse.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that is the creative impulse, is the desire to form and then to transform, because all forming is transforming of something else.
Mm-hmm.
There's a constant recycling. There's a constant, you know, there's a lump of clay that becomes something. There's a blob of paint that then becomes something. And so,
well, let me ask you something off the wall. Uh-huh. Then, is being an artist any different than being in manufacturing?
Yeah, because it's not just a technical process.
What else is it?
There's a meditative part of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's an encounter with manufacturing is making what is known.
Mm-hmm.
It's
you know what you're going to end up with.
Exactly. You've got a template. Mm-hmm. You're doing multiples of something. That happens as a stage in art, you know, threading horsehairs through tiny little holes, drilling thousands and thousands of holes, which is what I'm doing now. So manufacturing is a process of art, but art is not necessarily creativity is not necessarily a part of manufacturing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are phases.
Right.
Of it. I mean, and everything their creativity and creating new things must enter into everything at some time, or else. I mean, it's the most fundamental human impulse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a fundamental impulse of nature.
Mm-hmm. How do you mean? What do you mean of nature?
Of creation, of Like here's this thing. I've been watching monarch butterflies, and where I live in Albemarle County, I've become a monarch way station, which you have to fulfill. You know, all these things about what kind of plants you have and acres.
Oh, so you literally really are.
I'm monarch way station number 678. listed with the University of Kansas.
Well, if I'd only known.
And I could go on and on about
monarchs,
about monarchs, and about milkweed, and about habitat, and about loss of habitat, and what's going on in Mexico, and all of this. But I won't.
We only have a half hour.
Have a half hour, right?
We're trying to answer the ultimate question of the universe.
So here, last night I'm working. So it was, you know, we have this Ernesto, the remnants.
Right.
So I had to go. I've been watching different chrysalises, and there are tons of them around the property, mm-hmm. and caterpillars. And there was one that was about to pop, and there was absolutely no way with the wind and the rain yesterday, so I intervened, mm-hmm. and I clipped, which I'm always hesitant to do, but I clipped off the milkweed, brought it inside, put it in a jar of water, and at about 11 o'clock last night, I'm working in the studio, listening to Leo Kottke, and boom, this butterfly comes out that 8 days before was juice. Mm-hmm. It was green juice. It was the green juice of the plant. And then this liquid transforms and turns into the colors black, orange, yellowish, and white, mm-hmm. and transforms its substance from liquid into paper. And that's a fundamental impulse of nature. It's a transformative impulse. It's a creative impulse. And no matter how much that we know about it, there is something that will always be a mystery.
Right.
It's just I accept that. I appreciate that. I don't want to know everything. Nor do I think that if I just knew this, then I would be a master of something. there's so much of the creative process which is just in it is a process. It's not an there is an outcome, but the process is what is kind of most amazing for me.
So I mean, because I've had this discussion with other people, and is the process more fulfilling and engaging to you than the product, or is the product more fulfilling or engaging, or can you even answer the question?
Yeah, I can. And one of the words that came into my mind, the word salient, just came up for me. Mm-hmm. The outcome is really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be have integrity.
Mm-hmm.
What
do you mean by that?
Has to be well made, or true to its materials. If I'm using ephemeral materials, it has to be true to those materials.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be true in the making. Nature doesn't do something, something that's half-assed falls apart.
Right.
Okay. So I have to be.
Never seen a half-assed tree, right?
Right. I mean,
you don't see
right.
a lot of anyone. Walk outside and go, well, there's a good tree, but that one over there, baby, I'll tell you. I don't know who made that thing.
right. So yeah. I mean, I do care a lot about the outcome, and it has to have visual integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Has to have visual unity. It has to not have all the answers spelled out. It has to have lots of open questions, but have ways to get in.
Mm-hmm.
I really care about visual. The visual language is my language, and so I want that to speak.
Right.
I don't want to have to stand there and tell you about it. If I do, then I've failed.
Well, and you know, if you could tell them about it, then why make it?
Why make it? Exactly.
Right. Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
So I have a level of satisfaction or dissatisfaction with the outcome. I'm usually pretty satisfied with the outcome because anything I've been dissatisfied with or I think is junk doesn't
right.
end up. It ends up in the fireplace or something
mm-hmm.
else. And even the times in the creative process where a mistake or a disaster or something happens or some kind of big snafu, that usually is a doorway. For something, for lack of a more accurate
mm-hmm.
term, better.
Mm-hmm.
That thing wasn't meant to. There was a way that I was going for when that accident happened. It just wasn't meant to be anyway, and it got me derailed.
Right.
And then I had to change course, and it was not pleasant changing
mm-hmm.
course.
Mm-hmm.
But
there's a tremendous internal rich life going on here for you.
Yeah.
That someone, you know, when we were talking early on, I said the show was about trying to explain to the average person what it's like, you know, what the artistic process is like, which I think you're doing a wonderful job of. But there is an enormously rich internal life that's
yeah.
a part of this whole process. Yeah.
Very much so. And a very disciplined life.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's a
yeah.
really disciplined life. I don't know a single artist in any medium
mm-hmm.
who is not disciplined. Musician, dancer, painter, sculptor, jeweler. There's an incredible discipline. And none of us are making a living as an artist.
I was going to say what this is reminding of is, you know, so many of us are, whether we admit it or not, are trapped by... Well, I don't really, the money isn't important, but, you know, but they go do jobs that are sort of numbing and don't feed their souls, and they do it for the money. And what you're saying is that in order to do what you want to do, there's a certain sacrifice around the money, at least in this culture.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the money's not a part of it.
Absolutely.
Did you ever make that trade-off consciously?
No.
No.
It was never conscious. There were some decisions that I made. Interestingly, I was in my long working in art and working around artists. I was an apprentice to a potter and
mm-hmm.
knew lots of potters, and they were some of the most unhappy people that I'd ever met because they thought they were getting into a job that was going to be really creative, and
mm-hmm.
all they were doing was numbing out and churning out stuff.
Really?
And
production work?
Production work in it that was not satisfying. There are some wonderful production potters, but it was not satisfying. They were prostituting themselves to a market. They mm-hmm. couldn't change because they didn't feel like they could. They had painted themselves into a corner, but also they had made their artwork as the source of their livelihood. And so the decision right. I made early on was, I'm gonna have a job. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm gonna earn my bread and butter in this way, and I'm gonna do my studio work. And I've taught full
Why
time.
Talk about that a little bit more. Why was that so important to separate those?
Because I could not be true to studio process and give that the room that it needed to give that the room it needed if I had to have a certain amount of money by the end of the month in order to pay mm-hmm. my bills.
Right. So decisions you would make about how you would make your work might very easily be corrupted by, well, if I do it this way, I know it's more sellable.
Yeah, or
whether that's the
I wouldn't have been able to do it. Mm-hmm. I just wouldn't have been able to do it if it wasn't being true to something inside. True.
But what about success? Is that important to you? I mean, that gets into that whole thing of money and everything. I mean,
it does.
I mean, artists make art. Obviously, you make it because of the tremendous internal journey that it provides. There's also, you know, you want someone to look at it at some point.
Recognition.
Yeah.
Yeah, recognition, success, that whole kind of continuum of audience.
Well, what about self-indulgence? I mean, if I'm listening to this and I'm a person who, you know, it is an interesting concept. How do you deal with that? You know, how do you keep that from how have you kept yourself from just saying, well, this is also self-indulgent. I should be doing something, I don't know, you know, to save the world or whatever.
Well, I am.
Interesting.
It's not a dilemma.
What do you mean? Tell me about that.
I'm a Monarch Way station.
Right.
I'm a organic gardener. I donate lots of work to causes that I believe in.
Mm-hmm.
I practice the best I can Gandhi's mm-hmm. Be the change that you want to see in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And my artwork is all about, in one way or another, it is all about transforming our cultural paradigm, our Cartesian paradigm.
Yeah. I mean, we're sort of ending here where you started, which was talking about transformation, which is talking about, I mean, the butterfly metaphor was great, but, you know, that seems to be what it is about for you, is that, you know, you start in one place, you have some kind of idea, some concept, you don't know where it's going or how it's going to get there, and if you're lucky, if you're really lucky, maybe it comes out as a butterfly. But, you know, lots of times it doesn't. But it's about, it's really fascinating. It's about that transformation that we see around us all the time, in nature, in gardens, and tapping into that and sort of almost like riding that wave, you know? It's like a wave that, you know, and that's part of the reason I did this show, was so that people could understand that it's not just a bunch of crazy people out there who have this uncontrollable desire to splash paint on a canvas. It's
right.
Much more of a sort of a spirit. Spiritual is the wrong word, but it's much more of a journey than that.
It is, and I'm not afraid of the spiritual word because I haven't found another word that substitutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People can make all kinds of misinterpretations about that, but it's no longer a word I'm afraid of using mm-hmm. in terms of my practice as a sculptor,
mm-hmm.
And how it lines up. I'm an extraordinarily lucky person that it's lined up with all the other things that I do, that I don't have these deep schisms or fissures in my life where mm-hmm. I have to. I mean, I don't know how I could numb out someplace and mm-hmm. and do that work. I mean, even in the tedium of pulling weeds or in the tedium of, there's tedium everywhere.
Right.
Somehow there's a staying alive to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm weird. I'm not weird. You know.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. You're not. No, you're weird in terms of a culture that insists that you don't do that. Yeah. You're weird in terms of a culture that says you should be happy, not having any of these experiences, not having any of these journeys, and just working some job that's a part of a, you know, a money making machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how many of us do that, and how many of us don't have that internal life,
mm-hmm.
you know. And maybe people find it other ways. I don't know. Maybe they find it through their religion. Maybe they, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I don't know either. But I do know.
A lot of ways to God, I guess. You know?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of ways to God.
Mm-hmm.
There are. But there are some, for example, I don't have children.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have health insurance. You know, I mean, there are choices I've made that go along with that. And people who have more parts to their life in a way,
mm-hmm.
Than I do have some more difficult choices to make.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe they're not difficult, but they're more things to juggle. And I'm solo and at a point in my life approaching 50 it just feels wide open. and I'm really grateful I'm really grateful the things that have come my way and the choices.
All that hard work and discipline's paying off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Geez, and you thought it was just going to be one party and one drunk scene and
sleeping around.
Sleeping around. Really, you know, wild and crazy.
and then getting on the
and
covers of
rich.
Art. And then being rich, exactly.
On the cover of Art Forum. And
right.
In all the big museums. And
right.
Then you'd be happy.
Well, yeah, right. Well, that's what I thought it would be, sure.
Yeah. That's why you went after it. Little did you know it was going to be a spiritual experience. Well, okay. Well, I think we've nailed that. Thanks. You know, that was really wonderful. Unfortunately, we're out of time. So,
all right.
I want to thank you folks for tuning into Zero Hour. I hope you've enjoyed our lunch together. Look forward to seeing you on the radio next Friday at 12:30. This is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us.